From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear a conversation with the authors Susan Conley and Lauren Fox, both of whom have new books out. Susan Conley grew up in Maine. She's the author of four previous books, including Elsie Come Home. Her writing has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The Paris Review, Virginia Quarterly Review, Harvard Review, New England Review, and Plowshares. She has received multiple fellowships from the McDowell Colony, as well as from Breadloaf Writers Conference, the Maine Arts Commission, and the Massachusetts Arts Council. She has won the Maine Literary Award and the Maine Award for Publishing Excellence. She's a founder of The Telling Room, a youth creative writing center in Portland, Maine, where she lives and teaches on the faculty of the Stone Coast Writing Program. Susan Conley's new novel is Landslide, published by Knopf. Here's the publisher's summary. After a fishing accident leaves her husband hospitalized across the border in Canada, Jill is left to look after her teenage boys, the Wolves, alone. Nothing comes easy in their remote corner of Maine. Money is tight. Her son, Sam, is getting into more trouble by the day. Her eldest, Charlie, is preoccupied with a new girlfriend. And Jill begins to suspect her marriage isn't as stable as she once believed. As one disaster gives way to the next, she begins to think that it's not enough to be a caring wife and mother anymore, not enough to show up when needed, to nudge her boys in the right direction, to believe everything will be okay. But how to protect this life she loves, this household, this family? Lauren Fox, who earned her MFA from the University of Minnesota, is the author of the novels Days of Awe, Still Life with Husband, and Friends Like Us. Her work has appeared in numerous publications, including The New York Times, Marie Claire, Parenting, Psychology Today, The Rumpus, and Salon. She lives in Milwaukee with her husband and two daughters. Lauren's new novel is Send for Me, also published by Knopf. Here's a little more about the book. Annalise is a dreamer, imagining her future while working at her parents' popular bakery in Feldenheim, Germany, anticipating all the delicious possibilities yet to come. There are rumors that anti-Jewish sentiment is on the rise, but Annalise and her parents can't quite believe that it will affect them. They're hardly religious at all. But as Annalise falls in love, marries, and gives birth to her daughter, the dangers grow closer. A brick thrown through her window, a childhood friend who cuts ties with her, customers refusing to patronize the bakery. Luckily, Annalise and her husband are given the chance to leave for America, but they must go without her parents, whose future and safety are uncertain. Two generations later, in a small Midwestern city, Annalise's granddaughter Claire is a young woman, newly in love. But when she stumbles upon a trove of her grandmother's letters from Germany, she sees the history of her family's sacrifices in a new light, and suddenly she's faced with an impossible choice, the past or her future. I spoke to Susan and Lauren in tandem last week. Our primary subject was setting, writing setting in the novel. I hope you have as much fun listening as we did speaking about this subject and their new novels, Landslide and Send for Me.
I'll start by saying that I had long wanted to write a book about Maine, a book set in Maine. It's where I'm from. I'm fourth generation Maine. And I hadn't yet. In my previous novel, Elsie Come Home, I got close to Maine. She comes back to Maine for the last chapter. And I really loved that feeling of immersing in this geography. And then I was driving up the coast in a car, listening to the third Fleetwood Mac song on the radio that morning. We have a joke in Maine that you can't go a day without a Fleetwood Mac song. And I pulled over. And I thought, okay, I'm going to have some teenagers in the car in this novel, and they're going to be mad that their mom's singing to Fleetwood Mac. And that's when the novel began.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. And then obviously Maine as the setting is very important to your story. I don't know, was there anything else you'd say about how setting sort of just had its role in your novel?
I can say a lot about setting. I think that place informs all of my work enormously. So when you threw out this idea, I was very compelled. In fact, I recently taught a seminar in my grad school program called Narrative Conceits. And the idea was that place was one of the greatest narrative conceits there was, and that you could pretend or play with the idea of place as character, place as extended metaphor, place as like the vessel for all kinds of emotional complexity and issues of class and race and belonging. And so if you built up this conceit of place enough, your reader might go anywhere with you in a novel.
Okay, that's a great starting point. So now, Lauren, your novel takes place in a very different locale, or two different locales to Maine, but I wonder if you can, but it also, again, has such a huge role to play in the story you told. So I wonder if you want to talk a little bit about Send for Me.
Sure. And I just want to say, Susan, I love that that place is the ultimate conceit, and that your readers will go anywhere with you. That rings so true for me as a writer, just to try to make the setting as vivid as possible so that you just yank your reader right in. So my novel is about four generations of women, and it takes place in Germany, right, as the Nazis are ascending to power. And then there's a twin storyline that jumps ahead about 60 years and takes place in Milwaukee in the 1990s. So and just, I mean, I hadn't thought about it this way until I started thinking about this interview. But of course, my novel is all about place. Like, it's about having to leave a place. It's about how deeply we are attached to certain places and the rupture of having to leave. So I mean, Germany and the small town that the characters are from is their home. And there's nothing more, you know, intense and powerful and sort of visceral than home. So for me, the book is based on my family's story, although it's a novel, but I was able to visit the town where my mom was born a few years ago. And, you know, walk down the streets and look at the houses and look at the house where she was born and compare it to the picture that I have of what it used to look like. And, you know, so I was able to integrate all of those details. I didn't know I was going to be writing this book then. This was about 5 years ago, but, you know, it obviously stuck with me in every way, sight, sounds, smells, like the whole. So I kind of took that with me when I started working on this novel. And then I'm from Milwaukee. My the character who most closely parallels me in the book, it lives in Milwaukee. So that part was easy, sort of. I mean, as easy as it can ever be.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't have that as a question, but it's interesting. Both of you wrote about a place that you're from or are very familiar with. And sometimes I find it harder to write the things that are close to my heart, but I feel like place would be different than that. Like, place actually probably would be something you could write about that you're so familiar with and so much a part of. Do you think that's true?
I will say, just a slight pivot, I have the worst sense of direction. I mean,
oh wow,
I am completely directionally impaired, like to the extent that like sometimes I'll just decide to stay home rather than go. And the best present I ever got was 10 years ago. My parents got me a GPS, like one of those external big GPS systems for Hanukkah. And I was like, thanks guys. But it was the best. I am so directionally impaired. I mean, I sort of talk about it like it's a joke, but it's actually kind of debilitating. And my daughter tells me that she insists that I once got lost with her in a grocery store. I don't remember that, but it's probably true. But it kind of perversely opens up setting for me, because I made up the town in Germany, based it on the town my mom is from, but I looked through German town names and came up with one that does not exist. So I was able, so I think by having such a terrible sense of direction, I'm able to like create setting whole cloth from my imagination.
Yeah.
So I actually forgot your original question. I got so worked up about how bad I am at directions.
Well, that's actually an appropriate response. It's sort of like, I guess it was just generally about writing about home and a place that you're familiar with. But it sounds like even when you're familiar with it, maybe you have a little trouble tracking it.
Which allows me to take a place that I know and also that I don't know because of my impaired directional sense. I can kind of create, it allows me the freedom to create place.
Okay, great. Do you have any thoughts about that, Susan?
I was intimidated to write about Maine because I needed to do it justice. I wasn't going to take it lightly. It is this place that is, you know, home to all these generations of my working class family. And there's so much sort of collision happening here in Maine right now that are all explored in Landslide, you know, working waterfront access and huge class sort of, you know, chasms now. And coastal Maine, inland Maine, collapse of fishing. So I brought all this like sweet nostalgia to rendering Maine, but at the same time, I knew I had a like formidable task ahead of me because I didn't want to do cliche Maine. I didn't want to do postcard Maine. And I think, you know, I've been saying, you know, I'm 53 now and my children are 18 and 20, and I'm finally able to kind of get a little bit of vantage, you know, on Maine, a little bit of perspective. So for me, similarly to Lauren, I did create a fictional town, but it's very much based on the town I grew up in. And then I felt the task ahead of me of really rendering it accurately. And knowing that people I know are going to read this rendering, you know, people that I've written about, you know, will read this. So I didn't take it lightly. But I also say that I think place is such a generous structural device, you know, for writers, because we're talking craft here. I mean, it really lends itself to so many different sort of permutations and applications, right? You can create whole towns, you can create moods and atmospheres, and you can talk, as I said, about so many issues through the lens of place that I find it kind of irresistible. I mean, I've realized, I mean, this is kind of wild, but my first novel was called Paris Was the Place. And then I did a hybrid book of photographs and prose poems called Stop Here, This Is the Place.
Oh, wow.
So there's something going on here for me. I'm meant to be on this show.
That's great.
I'm just wandering around the grocery store.
Yeah. Actually, Lauren, I have to tell you, I have terrible directional sense too. I'm just so struck by that. I have terrible, terrible sense of direction. So this is interesting.
Yeah.
Let's see. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, I think one of the things I love most in both of your books is the way that place is used to amplify the emotional moment for the narrator of the moment. Okay. So in some cases, Annalisa, in some cases, Claire, and your narrator is always Jill, Susan. But anyway, so I wanted to just talk a little bit about setting, reinforcing mood. So this is from Send for Me. And I'm not always going to contextualize everything. I hope that it will be clear. Sophie stops and turns to Annalisa. She has the excellent posture of someone who has been lucky all her life. From an apartment somewhere above them, a baby, another one, cries. A curtain is drawn in a window beside them. It's midday, warm. They are alone together in the middle of the shady sidewalk. So this was such a wonderful example and beautiful scene. This is a very sad scene. The world, I thought, in this setting is both taunting by being sunny, but also sort of depriving Annalisa by leaving her in the shade. I don't know if that was purposeful. And then the curtain being drawn was so perfect, you know, just sort of shutting out sadness or shame or what else they don't want to see out that window. So that's just an example. So let's just talk first, Lauren, if you don't mind, about that moment. Do you remember writing that? And what do you think about setting in, you know, sort of amplifying emotional moment?
When we went to the town in Germany where my mom was from, it was hot. And the town is called Lang and Lonesheim. And the people we met there, they're sort of like a local archivist there who took us around. And he said that they joke and call it Long and Lonely because it's lots of long streets. And that, of course, stuck with me. So I remember writing that scene and just feeling like, you know, just feeling like I was there in that moment on one of those long sort of endless streets and in the kind of unbearable heat and feeling like, you know, I wasn't pregnant at the time, but like I always felt hot when I was pregnant. And I sort of imagined Annalise sort of overheated and hungry and thirsty. And like in this moment when her life is about to, kind of an important part of her life is about to end. And so I think, I don't know if I thought about it in terms of like amplifying the emotion. I just thought about it as part of the emotion of that moment.
All right. I love that too. I always love when I see something that wasn't necessarily intentional. Sometimes it's just me making things up, but sometimes I think it's going on underneath the surface.
Well, you know, never trust the author, they say.
So this is from Landslide, and again, I don't know that I'll contextualize it. I'm just going to go ahead and read what I was going to share. This is Jill's perspective. When I woke up in the morning, my thoughts were less dramatic. The trees outside the window dripped with water, which meant it had rained while I was sleeping, and there was a thick fog, so everything looked unearthly. I put my raincoat on and went down to check the boats. The water was a dark slate color and calm, more like a lake than an ocean. The fog was thickest by the shoreline, and I could move my hand through it like I was slicing weighted air. And then she goes on to think about something that's upsetting her and to try to figure something out, and she says she believes she's making things up. But I just loved how the fog and her confusion and upset in this moment are such a nice mirror for each other. You know, again, I don't have any idea if you did that on purpose, but I felt like the setting in that moment was so important.
Yeah, thank you. It was really interesting to hear that. I think that's the first time I've heard someone read from the novel. I think over and over, I was trying to evoke a sense of, at times, loneliness, isolation. They are living on this very small island. No one else lives on this island. It's November. I think I have a line later that says, you've got to leave an island in Maine before it becomes a prison. So there's a sense of things starting to get really, weighted. The air is weighted, like you just read. And in that moment, I really wanted that fog, because fog is usually very moody and broody in Maine. We get the fog and then like everybody's moods actually shift. So I really like that connection you're making. I think when it's happening and when it's working, it's something you can pull through a novel. Place as, you know, evocative of emotion is something I'm really interested in. And I would say for me, I'm really trying to get at emotion so much in my work. And I'm just looking for ways to do it. And I think Maine, the working class fishing Maine that I'm trying to render, does evoke a mood. It almost evokes like a nostalgia for that ethos of the past and these ideas of something that's more innocent that we hold on to. And so I was really trying to capture that physicality of Maine. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, while we're on this same subject, I'm wondering, Susan, if you can talk about including this moment. You have a sentence of setting that appears just sort of without explanation or introduction in between two other paragraphs. Jill is upset about her son, one of her sons, and she wants to give him all kinds of advice, but he's very defensive when she does give him advice. And so one paragraph ends with her thinking to him, but thinking, where are you these days? Where are you? And then the next paragraph is just a sentence. The ocean is a mysterious plum color with engravings like the back of a nickel. And then the following paragraph starts, please don't swear and don't kick the boat. But I loved how that moment of setting, that moment of what she sees of the landscape, just comes in. It's always so ever present for her, what she's seeing around her, particularly when she's upset. And she seeks it out. When she's upset, she goes outside and checks out whether the whales are there and checks out what the weather is doing. So do you remember writing that moment? And do you have any reactions to that?
You're kind of an incredible reader, because that moment, that I'm so glad you went to that moment. I think that was the first line that I ever wrote that tried to describe the ocean in this book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was really important to me, because I had them on an island. I knew I would have to render the ocean a lot. Mm-hmm. And I realized what a tall task that was. How many ways have we heard the ocean described? Like, could we ever say it new again? And then I took a try at it in that line you read. And I thought, okay, all right. And I got a little more excited about it. It didn't feel as daunting. And I love one line kind of resonance, kind of some in novels sometimes like that, to like bring us back to place before we go back into plot or interiority.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Can I say something?
You please do. I always jump in, just always.
I love that the line before that was, where are you, where are you? Because it's so like emotional, but it's also like, it's also evocative of place.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every parent is like, what the hell? But, yeah, you know.
That's great. I hadn't even thought of that. That's true. Wonderful. Well, and now I have one from Send for me. This is actually, my question has to do with the role that setting can take in the active telling of the story. I mean, I hadn't even thought about all these things until I was reading your books, and I'm like, well, look at that. How amazing. So this is before Annalisa and Walter leave Germany. And she's sort of realizing that this is inevitable, that this is coming. The narrative reads, her energy drains, but her vision sharpens. She sees the deadly risks and dangers she's been impervious to before. Cars and bicycles whizzing past her on busy streets. Trees with heavy, low-hanging branches. Men who narrow their eyes and look too long. The bench she liked to sit on outside the fruit market that she is no longer permitted to sit on. I mean, I just was so sad reading a lot of Send for Me, which is interesting because you're a very funny writer. And I wonder if this was a very different book for you. And the Claire scenes have a lot of humor in them that I was like laughing out loud. But a lot of this, of course, it wouldn't be necessarily what you'd be thinking about a Holocaust setting. Just so beautiful. And that I thought was such a perfect moment where she's just recognizing danger in what she used to see as just her normal life and a safe place.
This is so interesting. I love this. I wrote down active telling as I was taking notes to myself when you asked the question. And I think two things, the setting was changing for Annalise, you know, as the book, because some of the scenes are flashbacks to when she was younger and just sort of establish the emotional and physical like geography of the story to which I think, you know, in my mind makes the leaving and the makes the disintegration of the place that much more painful, you know, like the loveliness of her childhood as compared to the way, you know, that's the bench she can no longer sit on. So I, if I'm understanding your question correctly, I feel like I was trying to convey this beautiful place that was just suddenly kind of like erupting, slowly like boiling with simmering with danger. Mm-hmm. And then also I set a lot of the book inside houses and apartments. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a huge piece of this for me, that the way that, you know, how we like live in our homes and how, especially the way mothers pass on to daughters, the way that we're supposed to exist in our homes, in our domestic lives. So that also was like a piece of what was, you know, that felt painful to me as I was writing it, the way that was changing, the way she would have to leave, you know, so many of her things behind and so many of the like beautiful and grounding things from her childhood and her young adulthood. And that was like, that was shifting as well. And then when they get to Milwaukee, so much of her domestic experience is like almost dangerous in a different way. Like she's safe, but she doesn't know, she doesn't know where she is.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And actually, and you're mentioning that about so much of it takes place in homes and apartments, reminds me too that when your contemporary narrator, Claire, is with her grandparents as a child, I think this is, I'm getting this right, they want to keep her at home. There's a lot of fear of just leaving a house is dangerous.
That is stripped from the headlines. I was very much not encouraged to venture out. And I think that's part of the like inheritance of, you know, trauma and fear.
Right, right. I want to talk about something else that just is in my questions, but it comes up now. Your book takes place in Germany, but transfers to Wisconsin. And Susan's book takes place in Maine, but there are scenes up in Nova Scotia. And then there's also the island versus the mainland. So that's another sort of transfer of setting. Was it hard to change place as you wrote your books? And did you have to think about how to ease your readers into a new place? Sort of like you have to think about transitioning narrators sometimes, or, you know, any other sort of shift where somebody may have settled into the comfort of something and then there's something else.
What I'm struck by is that when I land on my narrative conceit, this phrase I'm using, which is a little bit different than a frame for me, it's a little deeper than that. It's the premise of this fictional town. And then more specifically, this island, that became the anchor for the whole book. So while place is kind of under investigation and is really important to the whole book, the island is really the anchor. So I just think that's helpful perhaps for our listeners, that I always feel like something has to have primacy, and they come and go from the island. Mm-hmm. So they do go to Nova Scotia, they do go to the mainland, but the island felt all important for me to render. And it became the literal home of the novel and the metaphoric home of the novel. So they were either going to leave home or go home, or they couldn't stay home anymore. And then I would move to places in the book. But then in my mind as the writer, I always knew we were going to go back home to the island, and that the island was the hub, if you will. And it's geography, like its physical landscape, the rocks and the ocean, just were so important to me as a writer. Once I had gotten those down and felt like they were there, they imbued the whole novel, because as we all know, you know, and I'm such an ocean person here in Maine, but the ocean is so all encompassing, mm-hmm. right? It just so loud, and it has so many moods. So I just wanted to share that. Like, that's my real take on how I handled place in this book, is island was the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And yeah. I don't want to, in either case, with either of your novels, I'm not somebody who gives things away, so I'm not going to go into detail about why, but there is a point where they have to leave the island for a little while. And I love that she mostly spends her time on a waterbed. And it's like, yeah. There she is. She's alone. She's surrounded by water. She's like bobbing around on it. And I was like, that's perfect.
I did not realize that. She has a mere leftover waterbed from her very funny, cranky father-in-law. But I did not realize that she's on water. That's so cool. Thank you.
Okay. So Lauren, what about Germany to Wisconsin? How was it writing that transition?
Can I say something about Susan's book first?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
My husband is from Ireland, and which is an island. And he since I've known him, so for 25 years, he and his friends every year, except, you know, last year, have gone to a different island off the coast of Ireland. And like, they spend a week camping there. Like, islands are so by virtue of his emotional attachment, I've become so interested in just the concept of the island. You know, it's just amazing that, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm landlocked. Well, I mean, I'm on Lake Michigan, but I'm still pretty landlocked. Like, yeah. It's just a fascinating concept to me that, like, the island in the middle of the water, and just like the state, the liminal state of being on the island and being surrounded by water. That's pretty, like, it's, there's something about that that's just magical and confusing and interesting.
Yeah. The only island I've ever spent time on a lot of time is actually in Lake Michigan, which is Washington Island. Do you know Washington Island up in Door County?
I've never been there, but yeah.
Yeah. So do you have any thoughts about the transition of place in a novel?
Well, so my book is divided into three sections, and one is in Germany and one is in Milwaukee. And the middle, shorter section is on the ship.
Right. That's true. Right.
They're traveling. Yeah. So, I mean, I felt like, and I before I understood too much about my book, I understood that there had to be a section between, you know, that there had to be a section. You said, is there anything that eases the reader in?
Yes.
I don't know if that eases the reader in, but it's like, there's still a moment on the ship when she thinks, I'm going to imagine that my parents have a ticket booked for the next ship. So there's this like in-between state, and, you know, it's somewhere between danger and safety, between home and who knows what is, you know, ahead of them, between the people they love that they left behind and this new future. I felt like I knew that I had to, and I also have some pictures, some old pictures of my grandparents on the boat that brought them over. And there's a picture of my mom as a crying toddler. And mm-hmm. so for me, that was an important midpoint.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. So I've already said this to you, Susan, that sometimes you give very brief, and you said this too, very brief sort of infusions of setting within the narrative. But I did notice that your longer descriptions of setting tended to come at very emotional times. And I thought that was interesting. And I thought it was consistent with your character being a resident of Maine and having, you know, taken in some of the emotional reserve. And sometimes she just sort of takes her attention away from her problem and goes to setting. And that's really interesting to me. But like, this is one moment, they're in the hospital. And this is a very direct tie of setting to emotion, which we already talked about. the narrative, she says, "I have no idea how I'll tell the boys if you can't come home with us. Sadness comes for me in the pale hospital room with the cinder block walls and concrete floor where I know people before us have suffered." So that's one example. And then you do it again in this apartment. I'm not going to give anything away, but there's an apartment that she goes to visit with this woman. And she's just really, she's not comfortable, and she's avoiding her thoughts. And she seems to really strongly settle into her attention on setting and the surroundings of this apartment. So I know that that's, again, sort of talking about setting and mood. But in a way, it was almost like the longer descriptions of setting were interesting. And I just wondered if that was a conscious thing, that the descriptions of setting became even sort of like more detailed in those moments.
So I think what you're talking about for me, when I sort of translate that, really good question, it's about cinema. It's about believability and credibility for the reader in terms of how much emotion am I going to be able to kind of put in the scene if I haven't done the hard work of building up the actual cinema of the scene? Mm-hmm. So there's like a balance. I'm a really big believer in sort of the granularity, right, of the moment, and how if we are going to have a moment of great suffering or great tension, and both of those moments you pointed out are going to have, there's going to be a hard, hard moment. Well, in my writer's mind, I have to do a lot of like diligence there to bring the reader so fully into that place. There's that word again, place, before we get the emotional payoff, if you will. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I'll say about that is I didn't think I could write a novel that was set on an island in Maine that's such an incredibly visual place, right? That's such a physical setting. So once I had begun to have to render the sky and the rocks and with such thoroughness, I had to do it for everything else, mm-hmm. in my mind. Mm-hmm. Like it was very hard. And you bring up a really interesting point because there's like a balance. So then they get in the car and they're driving, you know, and I'm thinking, as the writer, I'm thinking she has to keep seeing because she's been seeing so far and she's a filmmaker. She has to keep seeing. So then everything had to be like even more cinematic. You know, I kind of set this problem up for myself and then I had to like follow through on it.
Right. Yeah. So one thing I want to ask about, and I'll start here with Lauren. So place as motivation. And we already talked about this. We actually talked about this, sort of the reverse of this. But with Annalise, in addition to seeing danger everywhere, she also sees everything that she loved and that's very hard for her to leave. So I'm going to read again, if you don't mind. She kind of thinks about reasons to leave in another scene, actual reasons to leave, reasons that have to do with the way they're being treated and the dangers that truly are there and not just the people looking at her. And then she thinks, but the field behind the school where they played 1, 2, 3 stop and cat and mouse, she would like to watch her son or daughter run in that field, the cobbled street outside the apartment, her feet anticipating every wobbly stone, the fall festival they provide pastries for every year. Well, no longer, but memories of it, wine and beer and laughing neighbors, and it goes on. And I loved that there's like, well, no longer. You know, and it's sort of like she's talking herself into and out of this decision she has to make. Yeah. And I just felt like using place as a motivation to stay or to go or to make a decision, that was interesting to me. I don't know if I'm asking a different question than I did the last time now that I read it out loud, but do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I that is the scene where she is either has just given birth to her daughter. And so she's trying to convince her, and you know, that is a moment, like such a transitional moment. And she knows deep down that she's going to have to leave, but she also, you know, that's a moment of like deep connection between herself and her mother. And they have sort of a rocky relationship. And then Annalise has this baby and that sort of gives them the potential to heal their relationship. And then, so then I wanted to sort of bring it back to place, all the reasons, you know, to stay when you have a baby and your mother is there, like that's just a perfect reason to be grounded. But then all this stuff is happening around her that is giving her all these incredibly crucial reasons to leave.
Yeah. something you just said just reminded me of something that doesn't have to do with setting, but you were just talking about how she and her mother have a sort of difficult relationship sometimes. And I loved the way both of you did this great thing in your books where there's somebody in each case criticizing the narrator and being very specific about their criticism of the narrator. And even though as a reader, I was really on the narrator's side in each case. I mean, that was my person in each case. And yet I could see that the criticism had some basis in both books. And that was really well done. I thought that would be hard to do well. You know, you kind of present who they are, present their pluses and minuses, the ways they get criticized. And I get to see both what they think and their justifications or defenses, but also that there is some truth there. So that was kind of fun.
It makes me think that like everything is setting, like, because when you talk about that, I feel like, well, that's the emotional setting of the book, you know, the like that Clara criticizes Annalise because she's, you know, a dreamer and she's not sort of, you know, catching on to Clara's domestic, rules, and she doesn't clean the house well enough. And that's like, so that's setting, and it's all overlapping into sort of the way they are able to relate to each other. So it just feels like, you know, it just feels like everything is setting.
It's very cool. Yeah.
It's true, because and there were questions I had. Actually, the next question is one of these, but I'll just pause before I get there. But, you know, there is just craft pours into itself. And so we separated out to be able to talk about these things. But truly, setting is detail, and setting is smell, which is something we're going to talk about in a minute. And set, you know, there's just all these different things that can be setting, but also can be something else. And they could be character, if that's what we were talking about, too. So that's fun. So for Landslide, I was just going to mention, as far as place as motivation, the way that Jill watches for the whales. And you're welcome to talk about some other aspect of this question if you'd like. But there is this ongoing inclusion of setting that sets up an expectation in Landslide where we kind of feel like Jill's watching for the whales that are migrating, and they should show up at some point. I just wondered, you know, that just seemed very motivating, too. It gives her a reason to walk outside when she doesn't want to be inside anymore. And it gives her a reason to kind of like remove herself from a certain feeling or thought or moment. But in any case, if you have any thoughts about place as motivation.
Yeah, no, I think that you're right. I think the ocean as a place is acting on Jill over and over. And again, like this fishing village that they live near and this island they're on, in a way, I think there's a line in the book about how they read the weather. They wait and they read the weather, and the weather informs everything in their lives. And so the ocean is part of that. I mean, the ocean is, they can't leave the island some days. And then there's that idea of the mysterious things that live under the ocean. The whales. And I love that Jill, this surprised me. Like, our characters, right, they surprise us. So I love how she's kind of stubborn about, there really are very, very rarely any whales, but she goes outside and she sits and she likes to look for them because it gives her a break from her teenage wolves who are driving her crazy in the house. So she goes out and she sits out there, and it kind of became this thing. And then to keep pushing our place metaphor here, that became like the place where confessions were made to her sometimes. Like they had to go outside and find her sitting and looking at the, you know, for the whales. So then I had built like a little place inside the larger place, you know.
Right.
Going with that. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned the wolves. So she refers to the boys as her wolves. And oh, my God, I loved that. And I actually happen to be familiar with the story Boys in the House. Now I'm trying to remember. Is it Rick Moody? Boys. It's just called Boys, but I always think of it as Boys in the House. That was the best opening epigram. I never remember.
What's epigraph?
Epigraph. Thank you. Anyway, the wolves. That was fun, too. All right. Let's talk a little bit about smells. You know, smells are so evocative and such a way to kind of like cement setting. So in Send for Me, this is from the more contemporary perspective of Claire. Her parents' basement smells like old newspaper and air freshener, sweet decay with a top note of pine. And she's helping her parents clean out the basement. But that smell got me into the basement right away before. And then there's a whole lot of wonderful description of the basement, her, the aluminum cookie press, the Tiffany lamp, the plates, the white ones with the beautiful pink cabbage rose border, the old water-stained cookbooks with Anneliese's notations in the margins in German. There's just so much. It's wonderful, wonderful descriptions of things in the basement. And then she finds these very important things in the basement. But the smell, just starting with smell, brings us in so fast. I wondered if you were thinking about that when you started with smell, or if it's just what came to you as you wrote.
Oh, I mean, I thought you were going to ask about the bakery, because half of the book takes place in the bakery.
Oh my goodness, absolutely. Oh yeah, all the smells in the bakery.
That was so much fun for me to write, because my you know, I remember the smells of German baked goods. Although my grandparents actually, I'm so hesitant to talk about this as if it's, I mean, it's not a true story. It's a novel, but the story that it's based on, my family story, my grandmother's family owned a butcher shop. And my grandpa was a cattle dealer, which is how they met. And I was like, nope, just not doing it. I'm just not setting this in a butcher shop. I've been a vegetarian my whole life. I'm going to move into a bakery. It was like, you know, and it's such a, like, it was a hard novel to write in some ways. And it's, you know, it's emotionally draining. And so I really had a good time writing about the smells in the bakery. I mean, among other things, the bakery took me out of the story and allowed me a little bit of, like, and hopefully the reader, some like pleasure in those evocative smells. And, so I thought about that a lot in terms of setting.
Yeah.
And even, you know, scenes that didn't take place in the bakery. I feel like smell is like a way you kind of drop into a scene, you know.
Yes.
It's just like you were saying, like it brought you right to the basement. For me, that's, I sometimes have to remind myself, you know, touch, sight, sound, smell, taste, you know, just in case, like if my writing feels like it's getting a little stale, or if I'm just focusing on sight, that's kind of an easy thing to do, to just bring it back to smell, which is just like this little pop. And then you're there.
Right. Yeah, that is absolutely true. And I, before we let go of the bakery, I do want to say that I loved how the bakery case was just this little setting touchstone. It was, you just had to mention it. You know, you really didn't have to give too much of the bakery case. Maybe you gave it in a few different places enough that we built our idea of what it was, but you'd mention it without describing it sometimes. And it was just like, oh yeah, that bakery case, we're right back there. So, okay. Susan, do you have any thoughts about smells? And I'm not sure if I don't know if I flagged one from yours. I don't think I did. Sorry.
No, I think smell is probably the least accounted for scent in that novel of mine. There's so much around sound and sight and taste, but not so much smell. It reminds me, and I know we might talk more craft later, but it reminds me of this exercise I do sometimes. Lauren, I don't know if you do anything like this, where I have my grad students list the five senses, and I ask them to do it really, really quickly. And I tell them, and I there is some truth to this, but who knows how much. But apparently the scent that you list last really is the scent that you account for least. And so people are really surprised by what's at the top and then what goes down the list. And, you know, maybe for me in Landslide, scent was last. Because I don't seem to do a lot of, I mean, there are a lot of smells on the coast of Maine, but they're not great smells.
I'm thinking of the oil down in the boat. I think there was some smell there.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a little smell down there, I think. Yeah. But nothing like Lauren's Bakery. Well, I wanted to be in Lauren's Bakery.
You should set your next book in either a butcher shop or a bakery. The first cover of my book was a painting of a bakery case. It was bright, and there were some items in it that, like, we had to go back to, my editor knows a German baker. So she had to say, like, would they have had this fruit available? And, you know, so there, it was all very, and then they decided to like position the book as historical fiction. So they scrapped the bakery case and chose the cover that now is the cover of a mother and daughter. But I thought that was so interesting, and it was like it never felt quite right to me. Like, it never felt like the right cover for this book, but it was really beautiful, and it made me, like, everyone I showed it to was like, "Oh, that makes me really hungry."
Yeah, I think the cover is perfect. What you have now,
I love the cover now. Yeah,
yeah, so do I.
Yeah. Both of your covers are wonderful, actually. I do want to ask you what you might have read lately. I'm sure each of you is a reader. So what might you have read lately that you would recommend to listeners?
Right now I'm reading a book called We Were the Lucky Ones by Georgia Hunter. I'm about halfway through it and it is amazing. We're going to do an event together. So I wanted to read it. And I'm so like, I read it before bed. And then when I look at the clock, it's like 2 hours later. It's just, it's about a family from Poland that is torn apart during World War II. So a lot of the same themes as my book, and it's really wonderful. I just finished Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell about Shakespeare. It's reductive to say that it's about Shakespeare's wife, but it's from the perspective of Shakespeare's wife and about how they lose a child during the plague. And it's just amazing. It's really sad, but it is an amazing, amazing book. And I just started Monogamy by Sue Miller. I have like a book. I have an upstairs book and a downstairs book. So Monogamy is my downstairs book. So I'm just starting that one. And it has come highly recommended. So I'm excited to get into that one.
Okay, great. Thank you. Susan, do you have any suggestions for reads?
So I have been reading Christina Baker Cline's The Exiles. She's also someone who spends a lot of time in Maine. And I'm really enjoying it. And I'll do an event with her soon. And it's a great book. It's very broad reaching, a whole lot of scope. And she's someone who I bet we could talk to for hours about place, because she started with a book, you know, her books used to be super, super sort of located, even, you know, the scope was smaller and then they expanded out. I have been reading Cast by Isabel Wilkerson, which is just, you know, so compelling, the voice from the very first sentence. I dip into it in pieces. It's going to be a long, really deeply instructive and powerful read. Oh, I just finished a novel by a novelist named Brian Washington. And I came to him through the essays on food that he was writing for The New Yorker. And they're really place-based food essays. So he'll take a food that he loves and then he'll really explore the heck out of the place where that food's from. But that novel is about two men who fall in love, and one is Japanese and one is Black from Houston, and will their love endure? And it's a fantastic book, super place-based too.
Do you know the title?
Oh yeah, it's called Memorial. So Memorial by Brian Washington. That's been I've loved that book. Yeah, so that's my short list.
That's great. That's perfect. Now, I also wanted to ask what each of you is working on next. So you can start again, Lauren.
If you could just picture tumbleweed just rolling around. I got nothing right now.
Okay, all right, that's good.
I really don't know it because this book sat with me for, you know, 2 decades. It's been really weird to be done with it. Yeah. Like it's really been a sort of like, it's like I have an 18-year-old daughter who I'm about to send out into the world. Like kind of, I mean, I resist the comparison of books and children, but this one really,
yeah.
This one out into the world. I don't know what to do next. So I'm Swiffering. I'm doing a lot of Swiffering.
That's fine. How about you, Susan?
So I tried this thing where I got deeply into an idea of a project right after I did the final edits for Landslide. And I knew this was a trick that would help with that sort of terrible transition away from Landslide. And I was also trying to trick myself that we weren't having a pandemic and that we weren't, you know, in such an extraordinarily fraught political moment. And it worked for a little while. It really did work. And I was determined. And then stuff happened. Life happened. Some actual big stuff happened with my kids. And everybody's okay. But it was like a hard summer, even harder summer. And then I just have to report that I had to write an essay, a Maine-based food essay. And I went back just last week and I looked at those notes and I'd actually filled a whole notebook. And I had that feeling like, oh yeah, I think it might be enough to at least get me going. And it's about power, women in power, and do girls ever have power? And I think it seems to start with these women having a very boozy argument about whether they ever had any power. And then it's going to look really closely at sex, drugs, and rock and roll and girls.
So your characters, two of your characters in this book talk about power and women. It's Jill and Lara talk about.
Yeah.
That's
you can see where it started.
Yeah, you're motivated.
Yeah.
Does either or both of you have advice for writing setting that might be maybe unusual or stand out for the reader or kind of draw out a new aspect of the work that might kind of pop so that we see it better? And if not, if you just have advice for writers, that's fine too. I thought I would go with a setting question.
All right, I'll jump in.
Okay.
Because I'll forget it. So... What I would say to writers and listeners is don't be fooled by description for description's sake. It's a fake out, really. That so my prompt is often to ask writers to go to a place that has the most heat for them in their minds, in their project, whatever that project is, go to that place and describe the heck out of it. In a free write, you know, don't worry about syntax or spelling for 2, 3, 4 minutes, but then bring a big fat problem to the place. Hmm. So part two is a big problem where what I usually say is two people have to be in a fight. They have to be having a big fight at that place. And suddenly we have complexity. And then we have everything you've been talking about, which is place as conduit for trouble and emotion. And so it's always that leap that I think we have to make as writers from pure description and the beautiful sentence to the catalyzing action.
And so, making it sort of relevant.
Yeah. Giving it some propulsion or we just have a lot of beautiful sentences. And I speak of this with so much humility because I came to fiction through poetry and I had done all my undergraduate and graduate work in poetry. And I just liked to write really beautiful sentences, right? My hope was, and I realized it's taken me, I guess this is my third novel, that we actually need action. So I really come to it with so much humility that it's not enough to just describe the ocean. Then we have to have, in my case, a teenager imploding in a boat on the ocean.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Thank you. Lauren, do you have anything for advice for setting or anything?
No. Susan, that was so good. Yours was like a beautiful movie and mine's like a dumb ad, but I'll tell you anyway. my first book, one of the important piece of the setting that had like a lot of emotional connection to it was a place called Mars Cheese Castle. You've never heard of it, but it's halfway between Milwaukee and Chicago. And it's a weird like cheese store, but it looks like a castle from the highway. It's got like these spires and whatever. I don't know the terms for castles. So one of the main characters in the book has this emotional attachment to it because they would always drive by it and they would never stop there. And she just had this like sense that it was going to be this like magical place. And I changed the name of it in the book to Jupiter's Palace of Cheese. And I was like, I know how important this is, but it doesn't work for Jupiter's Palace of Cheese to be halfway between Milwaukee and Chicago because there's no reason for them to make that trip. And it's too much a part of her psyche. So I moved it. I placed it right near her parents' house. And that just blew things wide open for me. So I guess if this translates as advice, which it might not, but it's to allow yourself to play with setting. It kind of goes back to my horrible sense of direction because it's just, I have to move things around to make sense of them. But, you know, you don't have to be beholden. I mean, I guess it depends on the project that you're working on, but for fiction, you don't have to be beholden to exactly the way things are. You can play, you can move things around, you can rename them and no one will call you on it.
Yeah. That's wonderful advice. That's really good. All right. That's great. I want to thank you both so much for speaking with me. I'm going to just mention again, I've been speaking with Susan Conley, the author of Landslide, and Lauren Fox, author of Send For Me. Both of these beautiful books are published by Knopf, and they're both coming out in February. So thank you both very much for speaking with me about setting. It's been really fun, and I love your books.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. This was such a great conversation. If they can all be like this, Lauren, we're going to have a lot of fun in February.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was a combined interview with Susan Conley and Lauren Fox about their novels Landslide and Send For Me, both published by Knopf. You can learn more about their work at their individual websites, susanconley.com and laurenfoxwriter.com. This week we have four Write the Book prompts, thanks to the generosity of my guests. The first is something you heard already during the interview. It's a prompt that Susan offers to her students. She says that we should not be fooled by description for description's sake. Instead of just being happy with beautiful sentences about place, take your setting to the next level with this activity. Write about a place that has the most heat for you in your mind, in your project. Think about that setting and, as she says, describe the heck out of it in a free write for 2 or 3 or 4 minutes. Then in the second half of the prompt, bring a huge problem to that place. Susan tells people that two characters should really be having a big fight at that place. Suddenly you introduce complexity, which brings in place as conduit for trouble and emotion. Leap from pure description and the beautiful sentence to the catalyzing action. She says she speaks of this with humility, having come to fiction through poetry. She liked writing beautiful sentences, but now she realizes that in fiction, action really is necessary. It's not enough to describe the ocean. You have to have, in her case, quote, a teenager imploding in a boat on the ocean. Her second suggestion is that I share the poem The Colonel with you, which is by Carolyn Forché. It's a very powerful poem, and it begins, "What you have heard is true." Susan offers this line as a prompt for students and asks them to write without censorship for 10 minutes. She says something about that line often cracks open some big stuff for people, so I will share that on the podcast site. Lauren Fox suggests a prompt that's in a book, The Collected Writings of Joe Brainard. She says, start every sentence with, "I remember." It magically unlocks all sorts of memories, which can really open up your writing. Her husband is a professor of English, and he's used this prompt with great success with his students. When Lauren used to teach, she would also do this other prompt where she would ask students to write a short scene and then rewrite the same scene in a different setting. So that's wonderfully appropriate for our show this week on setting. Good luck with your work in the coming week. And tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. I'm afraid I'm a little short on time for the Bookworm's calendar this week, but I'll bring it back as soon as I have time in a future week. Next week, my guest on Write the Book will be Claudio Lomnitz, whose new book is Nuestra America, published by The Other Press. Maybe like me, it was about a year ago that you first heard about the strange virus called COVID-19. I repeat, as I do every week, please try to find the books that have come out, even as book tours are being canceled. I hope that you're able to read and to write. Keep in mind that the archives of the show offer weekly writing prompts to help you in your work. I'd love your feedback about the show. Let me know if you'd like me to interview certain authors or if you have events to announce. If you like the show, please rate it in iTunes, like it on Facebook, and talk about it. Be sure to tell your friends about Write the Book and about the podcast site, writethebook.podbean.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and lots of other podcast sites. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week.